Coming up on this week's episode of Check Your Balances, we talk about what we're fearing and what we're hearing. We get into leading economic indicators, AI, and more. Stick around. That's coming up next.
Check Your Balances is a show produced and owned by Kraftwerk Capital. The views expressed by the hosts and their guests are personal opinions and should not be considered personal financial advice or the opinion of Kraftwerk Capital. All investments have risk and may lose money. Consult with your financial advisor, tax preparer, or attorney prior to implementing anything discussed, and please do not use this show as the sole basis for financial decisions.
Welcome back to another week of Check Your Balances. I am Ross Anderson, joined as always by my friend and co-host, Dan Maseka. Good to see you, buddy.
It's good to be back.
It feels like we haven't recorded an episode in a long time.
I think every time I say this, I'm wrong, but it feels like 3 weeks, perhaps. We had a lot.
I think that might be correct. Yeah, we had a bunch of interviews, and we recorded them all like within a week of each other. And so we just kind of had all these episodes locked and loaded. And so, I've missed doing this. This feels like a fun time to be back.
Yeah, every Wednesday I wake up thinking, oh, I wonder what we're talking about this week on the podcast, because I forget the sequence that we released them in.
It's like a surprise to you, just like our listeners, is what did Check Your Balances put out this week?
It's great. It's a great feeling.
So can we start our show on, it's not a sad note, but it is a recognition of Chris Hill. In the week that we're recording this, Chris Hill's final episode of Motley Fool Money was posted on Tuesday. I realize our show will come out next week on Wednesday, but what a tremendous loss for the podcasting community. And at the same time, I'm so happy for Chris and whatever the future holds.
Yeah, he's put together such an amazing body of work, at least with that podcast series, and I'm sure more to come after that with whatever he chooses to do in personal or professional life. But I'm going to miss hearing that voice every time I tune into a Motley Fool Money episode.
I mean, talk about just a calming presence amidst a world of chaos, right? Like financial markets and financial news even is typically chaos. And Chris was not that. And I know that we're not the only ones that appreciate him. I know that everybody at The Motley Fool will miss his presence as well. And all of the listeners and many of our listeners who found us through him. And we simply can't thank him enough for what he's done for us and our show and our work. But he's been an inspiration, and we wanted to give him a shout out because it was touching to hear that last show of his. I thought it was great.
Yeah, congrats on a great run. We appreciate everything you've done for us, and we always have a seat for you if you want to revisit podcasting.
I mean, literally, open door. I don't care what he wants to record. If he just wants to get on the air and rant for a half hour, I'll put up episodes every week of that. That's fine. So yeah, if Chris is listening to this episode, you are welcome anytime, our friend, and we would always be happy to have you.
Speaking of not caring what we record and ranting for a half an hour, we have a half hour of content for you coming up.
Something like that. All right. We, this is a little loose because we're clearly not fully prepped on this episode. Can we talk about the fact that Robert De Niro just had a baby at, what is he, 79 years old?
Let's go with that. Yeah.
Okay. So presumably, even though we know nothing about the financial life of Robert De Niro, this child is now entitled to Social Security payments.
Yeah. Yeah. People forget that there are family Social Security benefits. So if you are over the age of 60, caring for a child and claiming Social Security benefits, your child might be entitled to benefits on your record too until they reach 17 or potentially a little more depending on their school situation.
And because there's no reason to wait past age 70, we can presume that De Niro has at a minimum filed for his own Social Security, even though I'm sure he doesn't need it. But yeah, so that means any minor children that he has are eligible to receive taxpayer dollars at this time.
Unless he's capped out at the family maximum, Ross. That's important to keep in
mind. He could be at the family max. And I don't know if that's what I'm rooting for or not, but I find it fascinating. And it's so rare that we come across this just because the average parent age that has minor children is not the average age of somebody filing Social Security. But that's weird that that's what you and I thought of because we're financial weirdos.
Yeah, we were looking at family benefits together around the same time where it was reported that De Niro was having a child, and that came to both of our minds. Whereas when Social Security was introduced, at Social Security age, you were probably not preparing for a child. You were probably preparing for being underground somewhere.
Wow. You took it to a dark place, Dan. I like it. Well, okay. So let's get into an actual show topic. And I think our theme for today is, what are we fearing and what are we hearing? There's a lot of data going on in the world that seems kind of counterintuitive, or at least in conflict with itself. And some of the things that I see that I'm worried about, I'm going to point one out. Consumer credit debt. We are now at $1 trillion of consumer credit debt, which specifically is up $250 billion in the last handful of years. I think it's the last 3 years. That means it's a third more than like 3 years ago. That's an incredible number. And the thing that has kind of kept inflation persistent has been the strength of a consumer that simply refuses to stop spending money. No matter what prices seem to go up to, the consumer has been the resilient dry powder that keeps fueling the economy that we're in. How worried are you that the consumer looks fairly tapped out?
Fairly worried. At the beginning of the year, you and I put out a piece about what are some of the concerns we have about the market and what are some opportunities. Consumer debt was one of my top concerns because businesses have been thriving on the backs of consumers just spending regardless of the resources they have available. And we're about to see the ramifications of that. Maybe it leads to something good, but from a personal finance perspective, I think a lot of people are about to kind of carry the weight of that debt for a long time because it takes a lot to unpack credit card debt that you've accumulated. And rates have been going up. Your credit card might be close to 30% interest at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think on average, it's probably a 15 to 20% headwind that people are facing if they're holding onto consumer credit debt. And I think the number is that something like average household credit debt now is at like $10,000 per household. But we know that there's a lot of households where that number is zero. So the households that are facing it, it's becoming a steeper and steeper challenge. And to quote the Grit Capital email newsletter, it's almost impossible to build wealth when you're facing a 20% headwind. That is a very challenging headwind if you are trying to become a net saver, because it's such a deep hole that you have to dig out of. Do you feel like we're going to finally see some cracks in the foundation of consumer spending as we head into the second half of this year?
I think we have to. I saw a chart this morning that showed delinquency on auto loans are at an all-time high since the Great Recession. Student loan payments are about to commence. And just from experience, I've seen a lot of people just kind of hanging tight, not making extra payments on those loans during the freeze. Because I guess, why would you if it doesn't help you? But that means your budget may have adjusted to spending that money instead of using it to pay debt. So when that turns back on, I think a lot of households are gonna struggle. And hopefully, you know, people are prepared for that.
And in the meantime, Netflix decided that they want us to stop sharing passwords. So they're adding a Netflix tax to all of us that are sharing passwords with somebody.
I know. When I logged in the other day, there was a pop-up that said, you know, we want to make sure that you're using your Netflix account. Do you want to establish this as your primary residence for Netflix? Or, you know, I don't know what the option was, but I was hesitant to click the button because I know a couple people are benefiting from my account, but then thought I better do it before they do.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to get locked out of your own Netflix. You don't want to be the one paying for it and then have somebody else claim the home network on you.
No, that's not a fun fight.
No. Yeah, so it definitely feels like we're in this spot where confidence is waning a little bit. There were several indices that track this type of thing, some of which I was completely shocked to learn about. So the Consumer Confidence Index, we hear about that one quite a bit. That fell in May to 102.3. That was from 103.7. So that is not a massive drop in confidence, and that's not a super low number on the consumer confidence number. But the one that I was surprised by is called the Expectations Index. I had never heard of this, Dan. I don't know if you were familiar with it, but the Expectations Index has been below 80 And the press release on this, and this was a May 30 press release, which is saying that that is the level associated with a recession within the next year. Now, the interesting thing here, that expectations index has been below 80 since February of 2022. So this has kind of been the recession that everybody's been waiting for. I think we talked about it even last summer. I think we did a doom and gloom episode last summer talking about what are you doing if the recession is finally coming, if it's finally here, the thing that we've all been waiting for. But it feels like that strength of the consumer being the last straw, that's probably it.
It could be. And honestly, with recessions, sometimes you're in them without it being officially declared. We might go another year and then the economic community will come out and say, yeah, between this date and this date, that was the recession. We're out of it now. That's possible. So maybe the expectations index is tracking accurately, and we just don't have the data to back that up yet.
Meanwhile, we're talking about an S&P 500 that, as we go into the sixth month of the year, is basically up 10% year to date. So, you know, to a point that we make a lot, even if there are finally cracks in the foundation, the question always becomes what's priced in. And you could have correctly assumed at the beginning of this year that confidence is down, that expectations are low, and been like, well, why would I be a stock investor? And here we are again going, oh, you would have missed out on a 10% run or at least partial recovery from whatever you were dealing with last year.
Yeah, the S&P has done well. It's been a good year in aggregate on the market, but it's really just pockets of the market when we say that. So even with the S&P 500, the returns have been driven predominantly by the largest tech stocks in the index. So if you look under the hood, individual companies aren't necessarily performing up to snuff with what it looks like. It's just being driven by the large tech companies of the world kind of moving that index up.
Yeah, there's a heat map feature that we have on the Schwab Advisor dashboard that I think is really fascinating. And when you're looking at, I mean, these are literally the biggest companies in the index. I'm looking at a 3-month heat map right now because it won't let me do year to date. But, you know, the big names, Apple, Amazon, Nvidia, Google, or Alphabet, Microsoft, Meta, Visa, MasterCard, Procter & Gamble, right? Some of these biggest names, all very green. And then you look at everything in kind of the mid and small space of the S&P 500, there's a lot of red. There's a lot of companies that have not been performing very well in an index that has been surging. And so that's really what's considered market breadth, is how much of the market, how many of the companies that are part of the index are really participating in this upswing. It's been very, very limited and very concentrated at the top into just a handful of names so far this year.
And I think that's been true in the past too, in the recent past, where a lot of companies were struggling, but what was carrying the index, or at least keeping it from falling, was really the performance of oil companies. So we're just having the flip side of that now, where tech, which was struggling last year and the year before, is now rallying and kind of supporting that index growth.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a touchy market. And, you know, I think that sort of explains a little bit of what we're talking about here, right? Which is that there's a lot of things that don't feel very good and maybe don't completely align with how the stock market seems to be responding to it. But one of the big things that's been driving all of that growth, particularly in the tech names, has been AI. And we did a ChatGPT episode, but the generative AI and the possibilities for it have clearly been the dominant headline in terms of what's driving these valuations this year.
Oh, definitely. It's been all the buzzword. Even companies that are only loosely associated with AI are trying to introduce that into their earnings calls so they can seem hip and generate some buzz for themselves.
I love when people track that. Like, how many times did you say the buzzword as part of the earnings call? Since we've got transcripts of all of them, I'm sure it's pretty easy to do these days. But I do love hearing how often these CEOs are using certain words. And I think it was even Jason Moser that mentioned this on Motley Fool Money, that a couple of years ago, it was like blockchain. Every single CEO was saying blockchain, blockchain, blockchain as part of their earnings calls. Right now, it's AI, it's generative AI. And, you know, it seems to be one of these areas where people are either really worried or really excited. What's your feeling on kind of where we are in the cycle right now, Dan?
I think we're early. So, I think it's very exciting to see what AI can do. And a lot of people are trying to introduce it as quickly as they can. I think we're working our way through some kinks. There have been a lot of stories out there of AI kind of failing the companies that have utilized it. But I think it's hard to imagine that AI is not going to play a very important role in the long run. So maybe we're early in the cycle of its development, but one day I think AI is going to be a crucial part. I'll say almost every single industry that exists.
Yeah, I really see it in a bunch of different ways, right? There's one part that certainly invokes some fear, that there's a lot of people doing jobs that look like they are just responding to emails. I think we could be put in that category. I spend a lot of my day responding to emails and just crafting responses. And if that skill becomes useless, in some ways you could say, all right, well, is the job at risk? And in other ways, you can look at that in a positive light and say, well, look what that would allow me to do. If I didn't have to babysit my inbox all day and respond to stuff all day, if I could take all of this administrative stuff off my plate through a thoughtful and well-created tool, there's a lot more that I could get done in a day. And so I think you can look at that same thing and say, and view it either as a threat or as a huge opportunity to your own personal productivity.
Yeah. And throughout history, that's what we've been pursuing, is increased productivity. So I think it's only going to help. You know, the other thing at play here is increased productivity is going to be critical when we have a population that's waning. I know data I saw this morning shows the United States is basically having 1.7 births per couple, which is well below the replacement rate. So one day we're going to have a lot of jobs that need to be done and not a lot of people to perform those jobs. So getting ahead of that and figuring out a way to continue along the path that we're, you know, treading for ourselves is also important for our existence.
I have talked about that worry before, but that is kind of one of my deeper concerns is when you look at global GDP growth, there's really only two things that drive it. There's the number of people creating economic output, and then there's the efficiency of how those people create economic output. So if you've got a lesser number of people, because we're not having kids at the replacement rate, essentially anywhere except for India, right? I mean, you've got very few pockets of the world where we're actually still growing the population right now. And if you're not going to find some other way to create that efficiency, you could very easily make the case for global contraction. But if you're creating that efficiency and that kind of technological advance, whether that's through AI or some iteration of what's to come, that could be the tailwind that becomes the boost there. I think in many ways, the thing that people are worried about in terms of individual jobs could be what saves the global economy in that lens. That being said, it does concern me that the people that have built these tools, the very people that have been the kind of bleeding edge in creating these AI tools, have been some of the harshest warnings about using it, right? Look at Alphabet. They built their tool. They were like, no, we're going to put this on the shelf. And then ChatGPT comes out, gets all this press. Microsoft makes an investment. And Alphabet's like, all right, we'll turn it loose. And they turn on the Bard, which they are considering and calling, literally labeled, an experiment. So they are clearly worried about it at some level. If you're going to label it as an experiment, not a beta, not, hey, it's not ready for prime time. Like, hey, we're just going to see what happens.
Yeah, that's not great. I forget where this data comes from, but I've heard over and over again that some of the predictors of what happens in the future are sci-fi movies. Like, they tend to get things right earlier than they become a possibility. And we had a lot of AI defeating human movies like 10 or 20 years ago. So hopefully we can flip the script on those becoming reality.
The one that comes to mind for me is iRobot, the Will Smith movie, where yeah, all the robots basically are able to override their like critical rules so that they can jail the people essentially for their own protection. That's a good one.
Yeah, great film. That became a company. I don't know if those two were linked, but every time I hear the movie, I think of a little Roomba.
You think of the Roomba running around?
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely here. It's going to change work. I know a bunch of people are already using these tools to create responses, to write things for themselves, to make their jobs and their lives easier. I am not doing that at this point. I continue to kind of explore it and just experiment, but you can be sure if I'm writing you an email, at least at the moment, I'm still writing it personally.
So when people talk about AI and the way that like individuals interface with it, I think most people are thinking of something like a ChatGPT that's like text generating. But there are really cool applications that other folks are using that I just don't think of because we don't interact with it every day. I was listening to an interview with a music producer who was able to dig up old tape and pull audio recording, like filter out noise of all these different things and focus in on only the sounds they want to restore music that would have been lost to time. So AI can focus on the frequencies or sounds that you're looking for, strip away everything else from like an analog tape if you digitize it. And like now we might be able to have new music from our favorite artists that are long gone. So there are creative ways to utilize AI that is not taking away jobs or not replacing creativity, but actually harnessing creativity. So I'm hopeful that that becomes more mainstream as opposed to just, you know, companies deciding they can do away with humans and replace people's jobs with computers.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Well, we'd love to hear from you. Are you using any of these tools as part of your day-to-day life? Are you using them as part of your professional life and supplementing your job with it? Or is it still something that you're exploring on the fence or worried about? We'd love to hear what you're thinking about it. Check your balances at outlook.com is the email address for our show. We appreciate being back with you all this week, and we will catch you next week on another episode.